Focus on Life.
Good evening to you. Thanks so much for joining me. You're listening to Lucas on Life right here on Premier Christian Radio. I'd like to talk tonight about good choices. Resolutions, that's a subject that's normally only breached around, obviously, the beginning of a new year. Resolutions are simply new decisions, a determination to make good choices. Sadly, only a small percentage, around 8% of us, actually manage to keep our resolutions until the end of the year. Recently, the 64-year-old host of the ITV chat show, The Jonathan Ross Show, obviously Jonathan Ross, appeared in a podcast, Jesse and Lenny Ware's Table Manners podcast, and they discussed the fact that he has stopped drinking alcohol. Towards the end of the episode, conversation turned to hypothetical final meals, and then Ross was asked about his ongoing abstinence from alcoholic beverages. "I don't drink," he told the hosts, and then asked if he'd ever drunk alcohol. He replied, "Yes, I drank very, very, very successfully for many years." He says that he can still drink, that he's not an alcoholic. He could take a drink if he wants to, but he said, "I choose not to. It's much easier. Life is easier without it." Well, surely for all of us, the most important skill we can develop is the capacity to make good choices. The choices we make about food and exercise and, yes, drink, they all influence our physical health. And the choices we make about how to respond to life's adversities affect our success and psychological well-being. Obviously, the follower of Jesus is someone who has made a choice and is called to continue to make good choices about life, about priorities, about following Jesus daily. Choices. Let's talk about it. Here's Wren Collective with "I Choose to Worship." Tonight, we're talking about choices. It all started when I lost my feet. Unable to see them because of the partial eclipse of a spreading abdomen, and becoming quite breathless after navigating a single flight of stairs, I decided to get fit. Everything changed overnight. Now I chose to say no to hamburgers and fries, which I'd previously welcomed with open arms, or more accurately, a wide open mouth. My refusal was occasionally accompanied by tears because I was quite attached to my junk food. Pizza was out, broccoli was in. Soon, I was running 4 miles daily and even visited the gym for more than conversation. 40 pounds gradually melted away. I actually overdid it a little. That is my tendency. I knew I was looking a little gaunt because strangers would offer me food in the street, and friends asked me how long I'd been ill. For 7 beautiful years, I kept it up, and even fell into the sin that so easily entangles the feet of the healthy. Lithe and smug with it, I started to look down on others who were chunkier and out of condition. I lost fat, but gained the flabby haughtiness of a superior attitude. But in recent years, I slacked off. My backsliding was gradual and so unnoticeable. I fell for the seduction of sticky, fat-laden puddings. Real ale is surely the nectar of heaven, but when it comes to the expanding waistline, it's a witch's brew. What had been an exercise regime became an occasional pastime, and my running shoes grew pale because they saw so little sun. A little cheese here, a cheeseburger there, and before I knew it, I was heading back into the obese zone. And that's exactly what can happen to faith. It can suffer gradual, slow, imperceptible erosion, and all because of a lack of choosing well. People don't usually suddenly lose their faith, although that does happen, especially when pointless tragedy strikes. But often we just mislay it, and then can't for the life of us think where it's gone. Instead, we drift, lulled into believing that cruise control works for believing, which it does not. A few years ago, much was made of the announcement by Bart Campolo, son of the late Tony, that he had abandoned his Christian faith and become a humanist chaplain. Tragically, a few internet heresy hunters, some of them little better than Bible-waving trolls, seemed to lick their lips with delight at his coming out. Others wrote more compassionately about Bart's exposure to the terrible pain of inner-city ministry and his lonely wrestling with doctrines that, to him, became implausible. I was impacted by his candid confession that his faith died of a thousand cuts. Ever so slowly, this bright, brave warrior was worn down, faith drained from him, not in a breach that caused the deluge, but drip by drip, until the tank was finally empty. All of this makes me pray that Bart will once again be overwhelmed by the authentic love of the living Christ, and that you and I will intentionally guard and nurture the faith that is our own, and that will call us to good choices. Just as a diet is simply the organized monitoring of what we eat, and an exercise program is about mapping out a realistic strategy for fitness, so we are taught to take faith one day at a time and to pray for daily bread. The past can help us. That's why Israel was repeatedly commanded to build monuments, write things down, and record what God had done among them. But while the present can be fueled by the past, faith must be re-energized and even recommitted to each day, today, tonight, choosing to trust, choosing to have faith. Without that diligence, believing can turn into a rather dull grey habit, and church-going and all of the accompanying Christian stuff looks rather flaccid and unattractive. Ironically, that's when we really need the church, so that we can huddle together and affirm the truths that we believe, especially when we don't feel like believing them. That means that I will choose to pray today and not just vaguely believe in the power of prayer. For decades, I decried the quiet time as legalistic oppression, and I became a pauper as a result. I've changed my mind. I need to choose to have discipline to pray. And then faith demands that I will choose to hang in there when God is unnervingly quiet, especially when he seems extremely chatty with others. I'm glad to report that I am back on track with the fitness program and the healthy diet. Most of the surplus pounds have gone again. I'm even wearing one of those watches that monitor my daily exercise and calorie intake. I've decided to keep everything in check. I've decided. And while I'm at it, I remember that I've decided to follow Jesus today. By the grace of God, no turning back, no turning back. Choices, decisions, for good or for bad. The prayer was straight to the point. Where have you gone, God? I punched a pillow, lay back on the hotel bed, and peered up hopefully at the off-white ceiling. I was drained by 20 hours of travel. The airplane food had been so bad I'd been really quite unable to identify it. And so now, jet-lagged and homesick, I focused again on the unyielding ceiling, half hoping that its stark whiteness would roll back to reveal the colour and clamour of a vast, partying, heavenly host. I could do with an angelic visitation. But the ceiling remained solid and clinical. There were only the beginning threads of a cobweb, no silken angel wings to be seen up there. I closed my eyes and listened with ears and heart. Perhaps a comforting divine voice, audible or internal, would whisper reassurance and direction. But there was nothing, save the dull drone of traffic outside my window, the relentless dirge of domesticity. Where have you gone, God? Suddenly, the madness of my mission overwhelmed me. I'd flown 6,000 miles to preach with no clue as to what to say. No hint came from the organisers. They said, just bring whatever the Lord gives you. Fine. But right now, my heart and hands were empty. Heaven was silent, and the absurdity, pretentiousness even, of a tiny human being like me attempting to speak on behalf of the omnipotent creator of the universe, it all crashed over me like a huge, suffocating wave, sweeping hope and confidence away in a second. Now I was bobbing and flailing around in the icy, dark waters of doubt. My own words surprised and shocked me as I spoke them out towards the ceiling. Is this it then, Jesus? Are we through, you and me? After all these years, is it all over between us? "Where have you gone, God?" Off-white silence from the ceiling above, and outside, cars droned on still. Perhaps you've had a few chats with the ceiling over the years. Don't be surprised by those moments. When we read the Psalms, we find the "Where are you then, God?" prayer liberally scattered throughout them. Maybe we occasionally wonder about the logic of living our lives committed to the invisible. 20 minutes later, my hotel room still awaited angelic room service. Nothing happened at all, but for no earthly reason, I chose to continue my dance in the dark. Sometimes faith is just that, a cold, hard choice, a good decision to trust. Years ago, Cassie Bunnell, a bright 17-year-old Colorado schoolgirl, made that choice, not in the plush comfort and safety of a hotel room, but while staring down the barrel of a smoking gun. Cassie was quietly reading her Bible when Trenchcoat Mafia members Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold marched in, armed to the teeth. Cassie was a relatively new Christian believer, but she was known on the campus of Columbine High School, Denver, as a radical witness for Jesus. One of the gunmen asked Cassie if she believed in God. The blood and the bodies around her made it clear what her fate would be if she owned up for Jesus. Her response was calm. She chose. She decided. "Yes, I believe in Jesus," she declared. A second later, a bullet took her to be with the Jesus that she loved so much. That night, her brother found a passage from Philippians that she'd written out just 2 days before she chose to pay the ultimate price. "Now," she wrote, "now I've given up on everything else. I've found it to be the only way to really know Christ and to experience the mighty power that brought him back to life again, and to find out what it means to suffer and to die with him. So, whatever it takes, I will be one who lives in the fresh newness of life of those who are alive from the dead." Eric Harris, one of the deranged killers, well, he made a choice, a terrible decision in his case. 7 days before the shooting, he was at a Christian coffee bar in Denver called Tuesday at Your Mother's. A local band was playing, and the guitarist broke a string, which took 30 minutes to fix. And so the lead singer used the unplanned pause to clearly present the gospel. Then one of the band members had a word of knowledge that somebody present was going to kill someone or had just killed someone and asked for that person to come forward for prayer. Nobody responded. Let no one ask where God was in the blood-stained classrooms of Columbine High School. He was right in the middle of it all, pleading and crying. But Eric Harris made a choice. And because of his decision, 13 lives were snuffed out before Eric and Dylan took their own lives. Just 12 people attended the dark, tragic funeral of Eric Harris. Cassie's memorial service was packed. The police, the district attorney, and the world's press were all there to say goodbye to the girl who planted her feet, lifted her head, and said, "Whatever it takes." And at that funeral, 75 people made first-time commitments to Jesus Christ. Decisions, choices, they can change everything. The bungee jumper. He leans over the bridge for the 20th time, as if expecting to see something that he missed when, seconds ago, he last stared down at the furious cauldron below. The time has come. He checks the cord one last time. He stands aloft, his cold eyes staring straight ahead. Perhaps he wrestles now with his thoughts, which scream natural warnings about height and safety and death. And don't you know that humans are not supposed to fly? At last, he jumps. What did it feel like, Jesus, the day that you peered over the parapet of heaven and prepared to take your own dive? You chose to jump, to come down among us. Did you stare and recoil at the swirling madness below? Did the stench of hollow religion drift up and wrinkle your nostrils? Did you look around you at the sea of stunned angel faces, bowed and paled now at the sight of this holiest sacrifice? They must have been stunned. Unlike the bungee jumper, there was no cord wrapped around your ankle to spring you back to eternity's breast again. No way out, no emergency exit, just a cross with its agony and its ultimate reward. But you decided. You chose. You came, you pitched your tent among us. Bold prophets and angelic messengers couldn't do what you did, and so you chose. But then the reason for your choosing is the news that really staggers. You stood on the handrail of heaven and free fell for us, for me. You looked over, looked down, saw us, and jumped. You came. You chose. You decided. That's the Jesus that we follow. He decided. Let's follow him and choose well this week. See you next time.
Lucas on Life.